This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
BFM 89.9, I'm Sherrod Kutin. With me, Melissa Idris and Kusu Chuang. It's Friday the 13th.
It is.
If this lineup isn't scary, then the day should be at least is scary.
I saw the day.
The day, yeah, the day, well, Friday the 13th, yeah.
I thought you meant the lineup, as in Sherrod, Melissa, and...
Yeah, well, that's quite scary as well. Are you superstitious about dates?
Not really, lah.
Oh, not really, eh? What about you, Sherrod?
No, not at all. Okay. I don't think I have a superstitious bone in my body.
Right. Are you an atheist?
No. I am indeed, and I've said this enough times. I am. But, you know...
I suspect I am as well.
I lie. You know, I think we all have some sort of residual superstitions, right?
Yeah, and, I think so.
Yeah, and, you know, I used to go, well, just partly on the influence of family, to palmists and fortune tellers and things like that. But I don't use that to run my life, as it were. But I'm always curious when people say things of the sort. But I don't think it has any real life effects. So psychologically, it might, you know?
Maybe, yeah.
So I only listen to the good news. You're going to be brilliant. You're going to be famous. You're going to be rich. And you're going to be handsome.
Two out of three in bed.
It's selective hearing. he only listens to what he wants to hear.
Okay. And that's probably what England fans were hearing all the way to the run-up to their game with Slovakia, wasn't it?
No.
Slovenia.
Croatia.
Croatia. One of the Balkan nations.
Guess what Sherrod was watching at the time? Not football.
Not the World Cup. I mean, just name a few Balkan states and you'll get there at some point, you know?
You'll get there.
So England's fans are very disappointed. It's not coming home. They're going home.
Well, they had a rhyme. They had a theme, but they had it as football's coming home.
And that's
the,
right.
The meme after that, when they lost to Croatia, was all is coming home.
Mm. Yeah, they're going home. Interestingly enough, there's something in the news about 20 Kenyan members of parliament that traveled to the World Cup at taxpayers' expense.
Really?
They've been caught out. Can you imagine taking public money to have fun?
Wow.
What's wrong with that?
No, 20 MPs traveled to watch the World Cup, and they watch four games, including the final, in a two-week trip to Russia. It cost hundreds of thousands of US dollars. How did this get was this a lawatan sambil belajar?
That's what it is. Lawatan sambil belajar. They're learning from Malaysia.
I saw something the other day about Nigeria being one of the poorest, in fact, one of the poorest country in Africa, despite all their oil reserves. Was that?
This is Kenya.
On the other side of the continent.
But similar
mentality, no? Corruption and graft and what have you.
Well, they've had problems in Nigeria over various things. But Kenya, I don't know what the story there is, except what I do know is this Sunday night at 11 o'clock, we're going to have that big match, and I know it's going to be when it comes to productivity, Monday is going to be really bad for the country.
I tell you what, Sunday night is a sporting extravaganza, because in the morning you've got Manny Pacquiao fighting Lucas Matisse.
He was Super Sunday, they call it Super Sunday.
And then once you finish that, you can watch stage 9 of the Tour de France. Watch them cycle 176 kilometers, and then you get to the final round of the Scottish Open, the golf final round. Right?
Oh wow!
And then once you're done with that, then you can watch the Wimbledon final, and then you can consume more white wine and red wine and what have you.
Men's or women's?
Men's.
Okay.
Federer's out, but it could well. It's either Nadal or Djokovic at the semi.
So just watch sports like that.
Just watch sports, and then
you've got the football at night.
And then if you get to the night, then you've got the World Cup final. Croatia.
Oh, amazing. Yeah. Okay, we'll be back with more good news. Stay tuned. BFM 89.9. I'm Sherrod Kutin. With me, Melissa Idris and Kusu Chuang. And that was Local Natives with Wide Eyes. We're talking about how Sunday is going to be really super for sports fans, cycling, football, boxing, golf.
Tennis.
Yeah. Okay, five different sporting events and really interesting moments in those particular events. But there are other good stories around. And, you know, we had with the Thai cave story, the rescue of those five boys. And now news that some of them who are stateless might be given Thai citizenship. So just basically securing their futures in that country.
That's lovely.
Yeah. So there's been a lot of good news around. But sometimes it is and happens more often than not, drowned out by bad news. There are, though, attempts to keep that positivity, running, up and running.
Yeah, so the power of positive thinking, I think, the basis of this whole issue is, websites like NewsNow, and of course, how this Thai cave story actually went worldwide and global. I couldn't understand it.
So was it a feel-good story?
It was.
It's a feel-good story because of the ending, right? But, the week in the lead-up to it was quite, nail-biting.
Yeah, and, I heard one analysis, which is the reason why it was such a gripping story was this was a story without bad guys. You know, in some ways, it was gripping, yeah, and it could have been tragic, but there weren't bad people involved. None of that was in the narrative.
So the monsoon is not the bad guy.
No, the monsoon's not. The weather is the weather, right?
Yeah, it made the front page of the financialtimes.com. That's how, wide-ranging the story was. It's really strange.
So is there something to be said about, these types of stories, human interest stories, or which have a happy ending that make us want to click on it, read it, and somehow relate to it?
Yeah. Along with that story so the central plot is about the boys and lost in the cave and then found, but they have to be extricated, all this difficulty. The other inspirational stories around was the people who volunteered, who came to give massages, the farmers who allowed their farms to be inundated with water, the companies that, gave oxygen tanks free of charge. Those were the inspirational stories because they showed our capacity for empathy and generosity and, just an outpouring of love.
So the whole issue is, do positive stories like this make you, put you in a better frame of mind for the rest of the day or for the rest of the week, for that matter, right?
Mm.
Does it? I mean, people like Tim Robbins have made a big deal out of this in the past, right? And the power of putting your mind, the power of positive thinking, etc.
I don't know. I personally, it always elicits a little tear from me. I must say, at that moment in reading it, I do feel a kind of a wave of compassion, whatever, sweep over me. The question is, as you put it, Chuang, how long will it last?
Well, okay, so Chuang, you mentioned the NewsNow website a little bit earlier. So this NewsNow.com is a modern website. On its website, this is what it says about itself, right? Modern website for a new era, featuring inspiring stories, meaningful news, and exciting recipes. The audience everywhere love to read and engage. So through a combination of inspiring and entertaining stories, we offer readers content that they actually want to read and share.
Correct.
So do you think that that's the case? Would people actually go to a website just to get these feel-good stories?
I think if it arrives in things like your WhatsApp inbox, and I've been watching a lot of Tim Robbins recently, and I never used to do that because, Tim Robbins.
I quite like Tim Robbins.
Yeah, but he's very good. And one of the things that he cited recently, which I watched on YouTube, he said that they did a test with, 40 people, almost like 40 people on the other side, and they gave each group, one group was hot coffee, the other group was given cold coffee, right? And then 1 hour later, they gave each group a survey, right, to describe a set of people. And the guys who were given the cold coffee described that person or those individuals as cold and cold-hearted, right? 80%, 81%. The hot coffee group, they described the same individuals as warm and friendly, also over 80%.
So a bit acidic, maybe, the beans were from... No, look, honestly, I don't... I'm very skeptical of those presentations of those kinds of factoids, especially in the context of training and, I don't know what Tim Robbins does. I don't actually follow...
Motivational
speech. Yeah, so every time, because you hear this... Because I feel that much of the motivational stuff that I've been exposed to is kind of quasi-religious, It puts you in a frame of mind to feel good, but in a way that needs to be sustained through investment in that motivational system. So I'm very skeptical of it. But then I could be the one who drank the cold coffee.
Exactly.
Proving their point.
Well, I just want to point out there's been a WhatsApp message to say, talking about feel-good stories, remember the baby Jessica story where she fell into a well and was rescued? I don't remember that. Sorry, I had to Google it, to be completely honest with you. I don't remember it, but I'm glad that you remember that. I think Mr. Tan, who accepted, thank you so much.
Yeah, there have been over time feel-good stories, very, very similar in structure, right?
Well, I think because there's so much heavy and
there's
negative
so much
news,
bad stuff
there's so much bad stuff in the world, sometimes you want a little good news.
Okay, thank you very much. And also to Joan for tweeting in, telling us that we're your favorite combination of voices. How sweet we say.
Joanne.
So Joanne, is it Joanne? And yes. Then, of course, you add everybody else into the mix so that nobody feels left out.
You're a sweetheart.
Yeah, that is. Okay, we'll be back with more. Stay tuned. BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, free with All Right Now. I'm Sharad Kutan, and I'm all right because I'm with Melissa Idris in Kusu Chuan. It's Friday the 13th. And no hex on me because despite it being Friday the 13th, you know, the goodwill coming from the both of you, oh, just makes me feel so fine.
Warm and fuzzy inside.
Warm and fuzzy.
I don't know what I'm channeling at this point in time.
I know. I think you're very, very chipper this morning.
I know. It's a Friday. There's every reason to be happy. And to add to the joy we just talked about, all the sporting events to welcome on Sunday, we also have, and this is for a Merdeka month, the next month, we have Communications Multimedia Minister Gobind Singh Deo saying that Malaysians will be able to post letters for free using the Kirim Merdeka envelope that now is available at Post Malaysia offices. The question is, who writes snail mail in this age anymore?
Precisely zero.
Yeah. Well, okay, to be fair, we don't use snail mail very much. I don't know, I can't remember the last time I wrote a letter, maybe a postcard.
Postcards, I love postcards. Yeah. I beg people to send me postcards.
Yeah.
Okay, cool. The next time we go on holiday.
And my address is... No.
Sharad Kutan, Kuala Lumpur.
No.
There's only one.
No, I'm in Selangor, man. I'm born in Selangor.
All right, but okay, coming back to this story, it's not just using snail mail or posting letters during the month of August for free. It's also, according to the minister, Gobind Singh, he's encouraging people to write letters to the Prime Minister and to express their hopes and dreams for Merdeka. So while you're at it, while you're sending a letter to your loved ones, one shot send to the Prime Minister as well.
Yeah, one shot. And, you know, Tun Mahathir is probably one of those people that would read every letter. You know, I'm reading Doctor in the House right now. He's an amazing writer. He's very, very good.
Okay, I have a copy. I have an autographed copy of that.
You should read it
following my interview
away.
With him last year. The interview we haven't aired or didn't air at that point in time, but that's another story. The important thing is I do have the book. And
have you read it?
No, actually. Not, I've read it in parts.
I'm on page 65 and it's riveting.
Yeah. Is that how far you're going to
I must say,
for a time-constrained individual like myself.
If you want to understand Dr. Mahathir, a really great book is one by a Penangite called Ku Butik, and he's
I've got
a book
that
the paradoxes
sides,
of Mahathirism. Mahathirism really,
well.
In some ways, and he's aggregates all his views and puts it, organizes it thematically.
And he's a paradoxical character.
So what would you write to him? What would you say in this letter?
I love your shoes, Tun. I love your...
I love your shoes, the Bata ones.
Yeah. I love your... There's so many things.
Well, I would thank him for siding with the democratic movement, even though it's kind of late in the day in terms of his own career, the fact that he signed on to the values and the agenda of the democratic movement and is fulfilling that today, I think, has given him a place in my heart.
Issue is whether that letter will get there, because, you know, the whole issue with snail mail is that it's become such a diabolical service that people don't... Well, you know, for various reasons.
I've sent postcards to myself when I travel.
Really?
And they always arrive.
Well, why? Why do you send postcards to yourself?
Because I love the postcards.
Why can't you just buy the postcard? You want the postmark? No,
Yeah, of course you want the postmark. No, it's important too.
10 years ago, I went to Italy. I wrote a postcard to my parents from the from Rome. I wrote them a postcard. It arrived there 6 weeks later. I was in Penang by then, and I thought, my goodness.
But it's not supposed to beat you home, Chong.
It's not supposed to beat you home.
You know, it's the idea so your parents got that postcard and said, oh, my son was thinking about me when he was on holiday. Isn't that sweet?
Yeah, it's nice.
Okay, the other thing that was really part of my growing up was the aerogram, which was a sheet that you used.
Yes.
So it was on an envelope.
Yes.
It was kind
cheaper
of an envelope.
As well, right?
It was cheaper. And you know what? I have a stack of aerograms that I received from the people I was regularly...
So did you have a pen pal?
I did have a pen pal as a young boy. I had somebody in Helsinki in Finland as a pen pal.
I kept all the aerograms.
Her name was. I still remember it.
No, Fendefert. And you know how you just write every single inch of the aerogram?
Yeah,
just
to
squeeze
it all.
All the aerograms my mum sent to me when I was in school. Lovely.
You still do? Yeah. I keep them. They're precious. Remember, you can join this conversation at any point in time. Tweet us at BFM Radio. WhatsApp at 018-789-8899. Very quickly, we're going to come back to the Tim Robbins, Tony Robbins problem that we created. Stay tuned. BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9. Journey with any way you want it. I'm sure I could. And with me, Melissa Idris and Kusu Chuang. Just talking about names. We got the name of Tony Robbins.
Incorrect.
We call him Tim Robbins because he's a well-known American actor. And I follow Tim Robbins and his work more than I ever have a Tony Robbins because he's got millions, gazillions of followers, isn't he?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay. Talking about Tony Robbins or Tim Robbins?
Well, Tony Robbins.
The motivational speaker.
That's right. He's very, very successful.
Of him.
All right. One thing that's come out in our conversations as we went to the music and the bulletin was the question of how successful this writing campaign could be. And I know some people have tweeted in about that, and this would be great boost for post-Malaysia. But is the thing that they have to get over is penmanship, you know, which is a word that describes your skill at handwriting, using a pen or...
It's a fancy word for just handwriting.
Yeah, handwriting.
No, handwriting is often the thing that you do, the end product. That's your handwriting, right? Isn't that what it is? Penmanship is actually the skill of doing the writing.
So 35 million years ago in the Jurassic era when I was still a student, my writing was already checker I am, okay? So forget about now. You know,
it hasn't improved.
It's deteriorated by a great deal.
Yeah, and so everybody's used to a keyboard, and that is where our muscles are, I think, are trained these days rather than in holding a pen and writing.
Well, I don't think it's just the keyboards. It's not really typing skills. It's the thumb, right? So now it's the smartphone. So texting is really... Yeah. So you're actually using less fingers. So writing, your penmanship is one thing. Then you're using your fingers to type on a keyboard, and now you're just using one finger, your thumb, to swipe.
You just do these gestures with your fingers. Really good.
Okay, so we're trying to empower, and well, at least the minister in charge is trying to empower letters and snail mail. There are also other attempts. Now we have Education Minister Mazli Malik mooting a decade-long dedication to Bahasa Malaysia, or Bahasa Melayu, depending on how you want to see it or call it, to empower the language. The question is, can languages be empowered or made relevant to everyday life by fiat, by an act of government, as opposed to what people actually find useful in their daily lives?
Well, I don't know. So this national language decade, for the next 10 years, they're trying to create a plan to make the national language the main language of choice in Malaysia and also ASEAN. I do have to say, though, I mean, we kind of had to get sending a little bit of mixed signals. You know, we're saying we want to look at English in the education system, revamping the education system, but we also want to memartabatkan Bahasa Melayu, or to give it its prominence, or to, you know, have this national language decade. I can't even decide whether we're calling it Bahasa Malaysia or Bahasa Melayu. Which is it? I'm seeing both, in fact, in reports.
Yeah, and there is interesting to coin a charade phrase, a polemic, which is a big... How do you say? How do you pronounce? What is the meaning of that word, actually?
Polemic. Well, a polemic is just a kind of vigorous debate, often cast in
with
very...
Chinese people are polemic.
Polemic. Well, it's cast in terms that are often are very... definitive, right? And so that's what a polemic is. An ongoing debate about whether Bahasa Malaysia or Bahasa Melayu is the way to describe the national language.
Sure.
And the different implications by using each.
Well, the Education Minister, Mazli Malik, and I think you've got a good point there, Melissa, in terms of the mixed signals it's sending. Mm. But I think there's a wider objective here, because at the end of the day, in New Malaysia, which is Malaysia Baru, it's all about the identity, right? And the larger objective could be the nation-building status. And I hate that phrase, but it actually is very accurate. the nation building capabilities of a common language. Because the difference between ourselves and, say, Thailand or South Korea or even in Indonesia, mm-hmm. when you go to Thailand, every Thai person is, by and large, indistinguishable from each other because they've got similar sounding names and a common language.
So regardless of your ethnicity, you're speaking one language.
Same with South Korea. And Sharad is vigorously pointing his finger at me because he's in night school mode now, okay? but it's the same thing with Indonesia, right? They've got a common language. They have pretty much similar sounding names. In Malaysia, no. One thing that might bind us is the language.
Well, okay, first of all, we always project our anxieties onto others. So we assume all our feelings of inadequacy onto others. Indonesia is an extraordinarily diverse country.
It is.
Linguistically. So the population that has the biggest amount of speakers is the Javanese population.
Yes,
Javanese as a language is distinguishable from Malay. It's incomprehensible to a Malay speaker. Indonesia chose at its inception as a nation Bahasa Melayu as its national language. It was a minority language. You talk about Thailand and linguistic diversity. It's not true, the Thais. There are 5 million Malay Muslims in Thailand, in the south, whose names are not similar to the common Buddhist Thai Buddhist names that you hear. Where? There's also the Lao language. There's actually much more diversity.
I know, Sharad, and where is Ahmad Fuad Rahmat when you need him? but I mean, by and large, right? I mean, look at, okay, I guess Indonesia and Thailand were poor examples, but South Korea, right? So I think the wider objective is the binding capabilities
and you think
language
is the way to do that?
One way, yeah.
I disagree. I think there are other ways. You can be a nation without having one word. But also, if you're going to keep calling it Bahasa Melayu, will non-Malays want to use it as a lingua franca?
We have, and for centuries, right? And because it was, and I think the genius of Malaysia is, in fact, the linguistic diversity. Everybody speaks a smattering of somebody else's language.
Which is great.
Yeah. And that is something that should be celebrated. I think the constant harping, on this, and I can see where Mazli is coming from. You know, he's also under pressure because of the opponents to the Pakatan Harapan government. I think this is about sending up that message. But tell us what you think. You can tweet us at BFM Radio, WhatsApp us at 018-789-8899. We'll be back. Stay tuned. BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9 of Monsters and Man, and that was King and a Lionheart. I'm sure it couldn't with me, Melissa Idris and Kusu Chuang. And of course, you can be part of this conversation at any point by tweeting us at BFM Radio, WhatsApping us at 018-789-8899.
And so many people have tweeted in and sent messages on WhatsApp as well. So thank you, everyone. I'm going to read a couple. Dania Aziman has tweeted in saying, speaking one language will reduce prejudice between us in Malaysia, remove prejudice, and we will be a truly united Malaysian. Victor Liu has also sent in multiple tweets. He's tweeted out, and the one that I'm going to read out is that what Thailand and Indonesia has done to bring people together was not to distinguish the non-Indigenous people with the Indigenous. So perhaps,
very good.
Yeah.
Very
and
good
Dania, point. Yeah. So, look, this is a contentious issue. And
it's
a cultural
hot potato.
It is a hot potato, and it incites a
polemics,
and also it gets people telling histories, sometimes false histories, but never lies. They tell histories about ourselves and about other countries, and we need to, in some ways, align ourselves in terms of this, an understanding, at least of Southeast Asia, linguistic diversity as well as nationalism. I think we need to get
speaking
that
of linguistic diversity, Chuang, I think we should celebrate accent diversity as well.
Exactly.
By the way.
Oh yeah, okay. What accent do you want me to put on now? It's a Hong Kong
that's
accent.
Honky. That's
all right,
honky.
Let's not go there.
I can do Russian as
let's
well.
Let's not go there.
I can do Russian. Okay. Now, we're talking about nationalism, patriotism, and of course, one barometer of it is who wants to defend the country in the most kind of concrete way, because our soldiers are men in, uniformed forces. My father was a naval officer at a time when it was seen as a serious option for a career option for a young person. Mm. Today, there's a concern that non-Malays are not joining the armed forces. But I must say that a lot of Sabahan Sarawakians, especially Sarawakians, are very strong component of our armed forces.
Yeah, so the question is why? Why is it that we're seeing a huge decline? It's not a new problem. It's, I think, a trend that's been ongoing for years now, that non-Malays, non-Bumiputras are not joining the armed forces. And some commentators have said, well, it's probably the fear of being racially stigmatized as a minority in the military. The military is seen to be dominated by Malays. So if you're coming in, you seem to be at even more of a disadvantage.
And this would be similar to the problem, say, for the civil service in recruiting, again, non-Malay Muslims.
Well, that's an argument for one to say it's more pronounced in the military. I mean, don't forget, and I'm reading Mahathir's, Dr. Mahathir's Doctor in the House biography right now, and there's a historical context to this, because don't forget, the Chinese and the Indians have, by and large, in large numbers, only been in Malaysia about 80, 90 years when the British brought them in, right? And he cited one case when, in 1944, 1945, when the Japanese laid down the arms, when they surrendered, the Chinese were cheering, but only in the sense that, China would be liberated from Japanese forces, not because Malaysia had been liberated necessarily.
So again, we're getting into this history talking.
Yeah.
I think the presence of the Chinese and Indians goes back a little
correct,
ways.
Correct.
Well, at least we're talking about the large numbers.
Influx.
Yeah, would be the 19th century.
Early 20th century. That's right.
Yeah. Or the 19th century, rather. But, let's not fight about that. The question, coming back to the issue of is the military
an attractive proposition for a career, right? I have to say, though, Sharad, right now, I think the armed forces in this day and age is different from the armed forces decades ago. You're talking about the way military warfare has changed, right? You know, you need skills in technology, in engineering, in computer. You're talking about drones and signals and all that. That's all. That I think there's something to be said about moving the armed forces into the 21st century.
Well, exactly. I want to go back to my earlier point, because you don't join the army because, you know, of the salary or because of the glory of dying on the battlefield. Maybe at one time in the past, yes.
It was.
But you've got to be very much in love with your country to join the army.
Well, it's not just that, right? It's not just about service. It's also being in the army provides you amazing opportunity to learn these skills. The army has no qualms about sending you for the best skills to get the best skills.
Okay, let's take a country like Singapore, where you assume everybody is very pragmatic, right? Who would be joining the military in Singapore? The Singapore government's military recruitment campaign, very interesting, because it emphasizes exactly what Melissa was talking about. Professionalism, skills development, you know, good salaries. It actually says you can make a serious career for yourself in the military. They don't talk about or talk up the patriotism issue as much as they talk up the professionalism, because they're appealing to a population much more conscious of what is in for themselves as individuals as much as, you know, the country. In fact, much more.
No, I take that point. Actually, that's very, very true, because in the UK as well, you've got the three, you know, you've got the Air Force, you've got the Army, and then you've got the Navy as well. And all three counts, those careers are promoted along those lines. And in the UK, the military, I mean, you've got the Royal Military College in Sandhurst. It's a prestigious position. Back in the day, when you left school, you joined the army.
Well, yeah. And I think at the end of the day, we are trying to train people to be both patriotic, but also fulfill these very important functions of government. You know, it's not just the military, it's also the police force, things that seem to put your body on the line. You're putting your body and not just your careers on the line to protect. And that's a hard sell, I think.
But, well, tell us what you think. I mean, if you have thoughts, weigh in on this conversation. Lots of people are weighing in on Twitter and WhatsApp, but most on our earlier discussion of Bahasa Malaysia or Bahasa Melayu. Actually, on that note, whether it is Bahasa Malaysia or Bahasa Melayu, we have Kavita saying, if it's a national language, call it Bahasa Malaysia. But Gantian Eng said the correct term is Bahasa Melayu, not Bahasa Malaysia. English, the English language is called English everywhere, not American language or Canadian language or Australian language. Although Australians may not speak English.
They speak Australian.
I think distinguish the thing is the description for the language, the name for the language, and the name for the national language. And that's where the dividing line is.
I think I know where there'll be a lot of interest from non-Malays to join the army. Okay, because now, you know, military warfare is conducted in cyberspace.
Sure.
Right? And imagine all the sporty geeks with, you know, pimples in their faces, fresh out of school, might be willing to join the army to be cyber war, cyber soldiers.
Well, that's a racial stereotype. Not all non-boomies. I mean, boomies also can be geeks with pimples. Okay?
And you know, the young technical.
Oh, okay, anyway, we're coming up to the top of the hour. We'll be back with more. Stay tuned. BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.